Good morning, everyone. We've got a high-quality group here today. Glad to see you. My name is Robbie Watkins. I'm a member of Kadampa Center, and I will be leading the discussion this morning, the operative word being discussion. If there's people don't have anything to contribute, we'll sit here in silence for an hour and a half. But we have a nice discussion. I'm one of the members who Donna Cease, our spiritual program coordinator, asked to lead the Sunday morning sessions when Geshe Gelug and Geshe Sampo, our resident teachers, are out of town. Now, when will Geshe Gelug be back? Next Sunday, Geshe Gelug will be back. Okay. We can make that again at the end. And so as always, let's start with our prayers. Page 34 in the Gold Prayer Book. Okay. Let's see. Okay. We'll start with Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra three times at the top of page 34. Tayataom mune mune maha mune soha. Tayataom mune mune maha mune soha. Tayata o mune mune maha munaye soha. And then we'll read the Medicine Buddha stanza and then recite the Medicine Buddha mantra seven times. Bhagawan, with equal compassion for all, whose name, when merely heard, dispels the suffering of the lower realms, dispeller of disease and the three poisons, I prostrate to Medicine Buddha lapis light. Tayata Om Benkanze Benkanze Maha Benkanze Benkanze Raja Samugate Soha. Tayata Om Benkanze Benkanze Maha Benkanze Benkanze Raja Samugate Soha. Tayata Om Benkanze Benkanze Maha Benkanze Benkanze Raja Samugate Soha. Tayata Om Benkanze Benkanze Maha Benkanze Benkanze Raja Samugate Soha. Tayata Om Benkanze Benkanze Maha Benkanze Benkanze Raja Samugate Soha. Tayata Om Benkanze Benkanze Maha Benkanze Benkanze Raja Samugate Soha. Tayata Om Benkanze Benkanze Maha Benkanze Benkanze Raja Samugate Soha. And now we'll recite the Refuge in Bodhicitta in English three times. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Now we'll read the Four Immeasurables and then the Seven Limb Prayer in English. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friend and hatred for enemies. Reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. I'll do the mandala offering in English. This ground anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun, and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratnam Mandalakam Niryaktayami. Okay. Is there a children's program this morning? So if children... Okay. Seven Tara Mantras before the kids leave. Okay. Om Tare Tu Re So Ha. 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 Okay, so children may go to their program, or anyone who wants to go to the children's program may go, regardless of age. Okay. Okay. Let's go ahead and do our praises to the 21 Taras now. Jill, you want to get a count on how many people are here? This is on page 190, and we're reciting this at the request of Lama Zopa Rinpoche, our spiritual director, to remove obstacles and hindrances to a successful Light of the Path retreat, which will be held next year at Black Mountain for a month. So this is kind of preparing the ground for that retreat to be another huge success. So we'll read the prayer for the benefits on page 190, and then the praises to the 21 Taras beginning on page 191. Oh, let's see. No, we'll do the prayer to the benefits at the end. I'm sorry. We'll start at page 191. From your sublime abode at the Potala, O Tara, born from the green letter Tom, your crown adorned with Amitabha, action mother of the Buddhas of the three times. Tara, please come with your attendants. The gods and demigods bow to your lotus feet, O Tara. You who rescue all who are destitute, to you, Mother Tara, I pay homage. Om, I prostrate to the noble transcendental liberator. Amish Tara, swift arrow, where Lasakaking and Hitstania sprung from opening statements of the Lord of Three Work Tailbone Loads. Homage to you, whose face combines 100 autumn moons at full, blazing with light rays resplendent as a 1,000 star collection. Homage, golden blue unloaded, waterborne and anadorned, giving effort, calm austerities, patience, meditation, her sphere. Homage, crown of Tathagata, action, triumph without limit, relied on by conqueror's children, having reached every perfection. Homage, filling with Tutare, whom desire direction and space, trampling with her feet the seven worlds, able to draw forth all being. Homage, worshipped by the all, Chakni Anna Brahma Maru, honored by the Hussasphere, courses of Gandharva's Yaksha. Homage with her tray and pates, destroying foes' magic diagram, her feet pressing left outright, blazing in her raging fire blade. Homage to her, a very dreadful destroyer of Mara's champion, she with frowning lotus visage, who is slayer of all enemies. Homage at the heart, her finger, adorn her with three Jumudra, light rain masses all excite, all directions wheels adorn her. Homage, she so joyous radiant, crown emitting garlands of light, mirthful laughing with Tutare, subjugating Mara's devas. Homage, she able to summon all her guardians assembly, shaking, frowning with her humsa, saving from every misfortune. Homage, crown adorned with crescent, moon all ornaments of shine. Amitabha in her hair, sending out much light eternal. Amitshi Mithritha Blazla, Gyan Ending Fire Abide, Righteous Left and Choice Around You, Troops of Enemies Destroy, Amitshi Strikes the Ground with Her Palm and with Her Foot Beats, Scaling with Her Letter Whom Seven Levels She Does Conquer, Homage Happy Virtuous Peaceful, She Is Field Is Peace Nirvana, She Endowed with Omen Soha, Destroyer of the Great Evil, Homage She Rejoice Around, Caring Both Buddies of Some, Freeze with Whom and Knowledge Mantra, Arrangement of the Hutton Letters, Homage to Ray with the Cylinder, of the Shape of Syllable, by Foot Stamping Shakes of Three, Meru Mandara and Vinya, Homage Holding in Her Hand, Hair Moon of Deva Lakeful, with Twice Spoken Tara and Totally Dispelling Poison, Homage She Who's Gods and Their King, and the Kin of Rastu Honor, Armored in all joyful splendor, she dispels bad dreams and conflict. Homage she is two eyes bright with radiance of sun and full moon. With Tritara and Tutare, she dispels severe contagion. Homage full of liberating, powered by the set of three natures. Destroys hosts of spirits, Yaksha, and race courses supreme to these praises with the root mantras and traditions thus are 21. Now back to page 190 in the Prayer of the Benefits. Whoever is endowed with devotion for the goddess and recites this with supreme faith, remembering it at dawn upon waking and in the evenings, will be granted all fearlessness, will perfectly pacify all negative, and will eliminate all unfortunate migrations. The multitudes of conquerors will quickly grant initiation. Thus endowed with this greatness, one will eventually reach the state of a Buddha. If affected by the most terrible poison, whether ingested, drunk, or if a living being, just by remembering will one be thoroughly cleansed. If this prayer is recited 2, 3, or 7 times, it will pacify all the sufferings of torments caused by spirits, fevers, and poisons, and by other beings as well. If you wish for a child, you will get a child. If you wish for wealth, you will receive wealth. All your wishes will be fulfilled and all obstacles pacified. Okay, thank you very much. Our goal is to recite the 21 Taras 100,000 times. And if you like this practice and want to contribute to that effort, you can recite it at home. And there's a counter on our website where we're keeping track of this. Is it 200,000? I thought we were going to, yeah. It's a lot, yes. Yeah, and it's actually quite easy to memorize it so that it's completely valid to recite it while you're driving down the Beltline or anything like that. That counts. Okay, let me just get a sense of who's here. Do we have anybody who's here for the very first time today? Okay. Okay, we've got our serious meditators here. Everybody else is at the beach or enjoying their vacation, but this is great. So let's begin with some meditation since everyone's a serious meditator who's here this morning. We're just going to do a simple breathing meditation for about 10 minutes. So begin by checking your posture, starting with your head straight on your shoulders, your back a little bit straighter than you normally sit, shoulders down and back, arms away from the sides of your torso, hands either on each knee or right hand on left with thumbs touching, legs in a position that you find comfortable and non-distracting. If you're sitting in a chair, it's fine to put a cushion under your feet if that helps. So just scan your posture now and identify any sources of tension or discomfort and address them now so that they don't become a problem during the meditation. and begin by taking three deep breaths from the abdomen, with the stomach expanding on the in-breath and contracting on the out-breath. Three really deep breaths like that. And now allow your breathing to return to its normal pattern. And as always, we begin our meditation session by setting our motivation. And any motivation that has brought us here this morning is fine and completely valid. If we just came out of curiosity, great. If we just want a little bit of quiet for a few minutes, that's fine. But it says that the highest and most valuable motivation is the bodhicitta motivation. The thought that everything we do, including this simple meditation, is done to develop our mind into its ultimate qualities of wisdom and compassion. That is enlightenment. So that we can be of greater benefit to others. That's not the way we normally think, but said even to generate that motivation effortfully, to kind of force it out, is valuable. So let's generate that motivation for the next minute. And having set our motivation, we now begin the actual meditation, simply paying attention to our breath, the physical sensation of the breath moving in and out through the openings of our nostrils, just placing our concentration there, nothing more, nothing less than that. We're not visualizing the breath. We're not describing it to ourselves, just direct experience, the movement of air in and out through the nostrils. We place our concentration there, and every time it wanders off, as it inevitably will, we gently bring it back. We set aside all other thoughts. Anything else that comes up in our mind, and just come back to the breath. And we'll do that for 10 minutes. And we can end our meditation with a dedication. Acknowledge that we've done something a little bit out of the ordinary that has created a positive imprint on our mind stream. And we think, may that positive imprint not be lost, but may it ripen in the future in a way that is a benefit to all sentient beings. Okay, we're a small group this morning. If you can just take a minute to introduce yourself and say good morning to some of the other people here in the Gompa. Okay, Andre, what are you going to talk about this morning? Okay, yeah. It is a discussion, and we're going to ask the people if use a mic when they talk. So do we have someone to pass the mic? No, I don't think you should. Yeah, someone who's healthier. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so that those people are sitting on their deck down at Emerald Isle streaming the session this morning. We got four people. Yes, okay, great. There was no assigned topic when Don asked me to lead this discussion, so I was kind of paying attention to what was going on. I said, I think we'll talk about Jeffrey Epstein at Kadampa Center this morning. Not specifically him, but I thought a little bit about ethics, right and wrong, morality from a Buddhist point of view might be applicable for these times that we are living in. Let me just ask, and you don't have to, I'm going to give a little bit of background how ethics fits into part of the Buddhist path. I mean, it's the basis of the whole path. But how many people here have taken refuge vows? If you raise your hands, okay. And how many people have taken bodhisattva vows? Okay. So these are two levels of vows that are offered fairly frequently here. You take them from a qualified teacher. The refuge vows are kind of your entrance into the path. And the bodhisattva vows are a more serious level of commitment. And they're specifically about your behavior. There's what we refer to as the behavior of a bodhisattva. And the first question is, what's a bodhisattva? People may not be familiar with that word. Anybody want to give me a tell me what a bodhisattva is? Speak into the mic. Take a stab at it. Okay. Andre. Thank you, Andre.
So this is just my simple definition. Someone who... someone who lives his or her life totally, completely for the sake of others.
Yeah.
This is how I see it.
Yeah. It's someone who whose guiding principle is bodhicitta, as we mentioned in the meditation, the wish to become enlightened for the benefit of others. So there are two components of it. You want to become enlightened. Why? So that you can benefit others. And someone who has that thought constantly in their mind, I mean, it's just part of the base of their mind, so it's not something they have to remind themselves of, but is there continuously, it's called a bodhisattva. And a bodhisattva is not enlightened yet, but it's a tremendous achievement on the path to enlightenment to develop bodhicitta and become a bodhisattva. So we take bodhisattva vows not because we're bodhisattvas, but because we want to become one. And the bodhisattva vows describe the behavior of a bodhisattva, how a bodhisattva acts in the world of having a family and kids and going to work and being stressed out and all this. How would a bodhisattva behave? So Lama Atisha, who is one of the great, actually an Indian master, but one of the founders of our tradition back in, when was he, like 600 AD or something? I can't remember. I'm not very good on these dates. He said there are three main components of the bodhisattva, of the behavior of a bodhisattva. If you read the bodhisattva vows, they're quite detailed, and they involve things like not destroying cities and, so you know, stuff you'd normally do on a wild weekend. But Lama Atisha made it a little bit simpler. He described what he called as the three higher trainings, okay? So this is the behavior of a bodhisattva. A bodhisattva practices the three, or trains himself in these three higher qualities. And if you're familiar with Tibetan Buddhism at all, you know they love lists. This is a very short one. There are only three parts of it. Does anybody know what the three higher trainings are? Anybody heard that phrase? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to put there are three. The first one is ethics. Second is concentration. And the third is wisdom. Okay, so what do those words mean here? I'm going to work backwards because ethics is the one we're going to talk about this morning. Another phrase for wisdom in this context is discriminating awareness. Okay. And wisdom refers to seeing reality as it actually is. Having the ability to discriminate between what is reality and what is our projection onto reality. Okay? So a bodhisattva practices in developing discriminating awareness to see things, people, thoughts, emotions, the world around us as it is, and not to be sucked up by our own projections that we automatically project onto things. So that's what wisdom is, the ability to discriminate reality from what is not reality. Okay? Concentration is pretty straightforward. We practiced a little bit of concentration in the meditation. It's the ability to keep the mind on a chosen object. Okay? Ethics is what I wanted to talk about today. What do people think of when they hear the word ethics? Just throw out some things that come to mind. Okay, Plato, the allegory of the cave. Okay, very good. Anyone else?
Doing the right thing.
Doing the right thing, not doing the wrong thing. Okay, what else?
Doing the right thing when nobody's looking.
Doing the right thing when nobody's looking. Okay.
Do no harm.
Do no harm. Okay, that's a very Buddhist one. Yeah.
Not just your actions, but your thoughts are aligned with your values.
Yeah, your thoughts, okay. In Buddhism, we're always referring to actions of body, actions of speech, and actions of mind. They're all equally important. What we do, what we say, what we think. Okay, yeah. And frequently this is elaborated to be as ethical, self-discipline. Exactly. As Venerable Rabina says, the first stage, yeah. The first stage, if we subdivide ethical self-discipline, A, we refrain from destructive behavior. Okay, this is, as Jill said, what Venerable Rabina refers to as zip your lips and keep your hands to yourself. Okay? That's dealing with actions of body and speech. Okay? Zip your lips, keep your hands to yourself. Stop harming others. Okay? Refrain from harming others. That's the first stage in ethical self-discipline. Okay? Second stage, engage in constructive behavior and by this he doesn't mean the Buddha when he's talking about this at this one B he's not talking about necessarily doing good deeds by constructive behavior he's talking about working on your mind okay this is body and speech. Once you've got those under control, which are comparatively easy, then we can start. We don't have to master this completely. Then we can start working on our mind. That's considered constructive behavior. It means meditation, becoming familiar with your mind, looking at what's going on in there. So it's very clear if we're out during the daytime killing and raping and stealing, it's going to be hard to come to Kadampa Center that evening and have a useful meditation session, okay? You have to have some gross control over your body and speech before you can really start to work with your mind, okay? And then the third part is the discipline of actually helping others. The analogy that's given sometimes is if we see someone drowning in a pond and we have no idea how to swim, jumping in the pond isn't going to accomplish anything except having two people drowned. Okay. Well, once we've developed some control over our body and speech and over our mind, then we can begin to practice actually helping others. Not that we don't, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't help others until you've mastered those others, but this is going to be so much more effective if we've developed some sense of control over our actions of body, speech, and mind. Comments or questions? Yeah, let's go to Andre. Thank you.
Yeah, this is the thing, right? Yeah, refrain from destructive behavior, engage in constructive behavior, discipline. You know, you work. You want to work with the body first.
Closer.
Want to work with the body first, and then the mind. Mm-hmm. But since everything begins with the concept,
mm-hmm.
you know, first we have the thought of doing something or saying something.
Yeah.
And then we have the thought of doing something. The thought comes first. It seems like to me you would work on the mind first, to some degree anyway, mm-hmm. before you really get into the
real. Yeah. Well, you know, you're really doing all three. It's not such a chronological sequence as presented here. For most people, though, the gross actions of the body are easier to develop some control over than our mind. You know, the Buddha said the mind is the hardest to control.
Right.
Now, ultimately, if we control our mind, the body and speech are automatically taken right. care of.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's like the Lam Rim, you know, it's a sequence, but we don't stick at the first part until we master that before
right,
we even look at the other parts.
So the mental part is mainly like the concentration, really being able to focus on one thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
And looking at the negative thoughts and seeing what's there. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
No, Sandy's comment about doing the right thing when nobody's looking
mm-hmm.
comes to mind. I was reading a book recently that was a study of words, keywords that people use when they use Google.
Mm-hmm.
And it is amazing how many negative things, prejudice, bias, just horrible things that people do in the privacy of their homes when they're, and that reminds me of this whole idea of thinking, putting your thoughts in alignment with your behavior is something that's much more challenging for a lot of people, I think.
Yeah. But your thoughts, parentheses, including Google searches or whatever you click on your computer. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Someone else. Joe?
I don't know if this is one of those fake Buddha quotes that you hear about or if it's real. So I just wondered. I found it a while ago, and everyone's probably heard it, but it just simply said, do no unwholesome actions. Commit only wholesome actions. Subdue your mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's real,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was, it just struck me.
That's
the
same thing in a different
yeah.
order. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's A, C, and B, the way you said it. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was just, I don't know, at the time it was humorous, like, okay. Well, that covers pretty much everything.
Yeah. Sounds relatively simple. Yeah. Okay. Anyone else? Okay, I'm going to throw this out. Okay, this is what the Buddha said Buddhist ethics is, Buddhist morality. So, why? Why should we pay any attention to this? What's the benefit of engaging in this path? This kind of training in ethical behavior. What's the benefit for us as individuals right now? Why would we want to behave this way? Why do we want to be ethical when no one's watching? What are some benefits of it for us?
You get to be born human.
Okay. According to, what's the cause of having this human body? In this human mind that everyone here has. Having behaved ethically in the past, if we accept the concept of previous lifetimes, behaving ethically is the main cause for being reborn as a human, as opposed to a cockroach or a being in some other realm. And the advantage of being born as a human, according to the Buddha, is that it's the rebirth where you have the greatest opportunity for spiritual practice. We have enough suffering that we're dissatisfied and we're motivated to change, but we have a body and a mind that can actually come to Kadampa Center on Sunday morning and start to think about these things. It's kind of like a Goldilocks existence, not too hot, not too cold. Just the right amount of suffering and the right amount of ability to do something about that suffering. So the vast majority of consciousnesses, according to the Buddha, are not in human rebirths. So the fact that we have a human rebirth means indubitably that we have behaved ethically in the past. So that's something to rejoice in. We have a comment there.
sometimes I wonder if really being reborn as a human is actually an evolution of the spirit. Because if that were the case, then humans would not be destroying the planet, number one. Number two, we really don't know. Mm-hmm. What is it that the cockroach thinks?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that we tend to underestimate the consciousness of other living beings.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When we are barely beginning to understand, the tip of the iceberg of what their consciousness is.
I mean, I think that's a valid point. Being born as a human is said is incredibly favorable, but that does not mean that we're going to live that human life as ethically. It's possible to completely waste that rebirth. It's not saying that human beings do behave ethically now. It's just saying that having that body and mind is the result of ethical behavior in the past, which may have been as a cockroach. I don't know. It is possible for a cockroach to behave ethically. It's, according to the Buddha, it's harder, but to get into a human rebirth, you have behaved ethically. But what you do with this lifetime is completely up to you. Yeah, and I think a lot of people are wasting it. Yeah.
I watch a lot of National Geographic and shows like that. Mm. So you see these wild animals, right? And so you have the predator and you.
Lama Zopa loves to watch those shows. Also, he talks about them a lot.
It's incredible, right? You see them, and so they see what they want. They see their prey, and they go after it, and they don't even think about whether I should do this or not, whether I should kill this animal or not. It's just instinctive, and they're driven to do that, to kill. I think with this, having this human form, having this consciousness, we can make, right, and this is what I tell the guys in prison, we can make different choices, right? We can decide, you know what, yeah, I really want to kill that guy, but you know what, maybe it's not the best thing to do. Right, yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, as Robbie said, you know, like what we do with our human life, that's up to us. But we do have, and I think that's what makes it so precious and so valuable, because of our conscience. I look at my little doggy. I love my dog, right? But I would not want to be my dog. My dog is waiting for me to come home just so that it can get a treat, or it can be, you know, have some, you know, feel loved or feel comforted. Yeah, absolutely. I don't have to do that, right? Right, but the dog is totally dependent upon us, you know. Yeah, so that way, I think I'm very grateful to have this human form.
All right, I don't want to start a discussion that is going to be long, but I think that the consciousness of different animals varies, and for example, we know that elephants have the capacity to actually make judgments.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if they can recognize when a human being, for example, wants to help them. And they can also recognize that they can make actually the assessment of, you hurt me, and I'm going to take revenge over you. Mm-hmm. And they actually plan how to go and actually destroy the houses of those who...
Mm-hmm.
Who did harm to them. So there is a certain level of judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And then the same thing happens with dolphins, happens with other different animals. So I think from our part, it's very arrogant to say that we are more evolved, because we really don't know what's going on through their minds. And it's like we used to think that there is no consciousness in plants, but there is. There is in trees, can mm-hmm. communicate with each mm-hmm. other, and they can actually help each other. So not everything is black and white.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Chimpanzees, we share 98% of their DNA. So we can't say that we're better than they are.
Well, according to the Buddhist teaching, we've all been reborn countless times in every form.
I'm sorry,
according to the teachings of the Buddha, we've all been reborn countless previous times as every sort of animal, every sort of insect. And other realms that we can't even see. So I don't think it, so in that sense, we're not any different from other beings, okay? They all have the same type of consciousness, and they all have an equal potential to become enlightened. I mean, a cockroach can become enlightened as a cockroach. It's difficult, but it's a possibility. So I don't think it's making that much distinction. It's just saying a human body and a human mind are very precious and are the results of behaving ethically in the past.
I want to say I thought about this a lot because I am trained as a wildlife biologist, so, and a forest ecologist, so I've thought about a lot of these things when I was just learning about Buddhism and trying to resolve things in my mind between the science and stuff. And I think the thing where you're thinking more of, I think, is actually biological evolution, you know, where we are somewhere higher up the chain. It doesn't mean we're better than them, but I think the main difference, what's the best thing, we're not arrogant that, oh, we're better than you, elephant. It's more like I feel sad for them because they can't study the Dharma. That's a step that you need to become enlightened. And unless you're in human form, or I think, you know, Deva or whatever it is, and whatever it is, you can't. So they have to wait. Now, those special things with the cockroaches that float around the stoop and become enlightened, I'm not sure about all of those. And I don't know. Those are outliers. But in general, I think the precious human life, it's not that we're better than everyone else. It's just that if the cockroach comes in here, it probably won't understand. The elephant would be super cool in the room. But it probably wouldn't be able to get what Robbie's telling us or read any of the Dharma. And I think that's the main thing, why they say it's best to be born as a human. I think that's really what they mean, not that we're lording over everyone. That's Christianity, where we lord over all the animals.
Yeah. Good discussion. I'm going, okay. That could go on. That could be a whole class in and of itself. Okay, so one of the benefits of practicing ethics, according to the Buddha, is being reborn as a human being. What are the other benefits? Why? What are other reasons that we want to behave ethically? I mean, why? Why do we want to? Yeah, okay.
So it seems to me like part of what we're trying to do is get a lot of these negative things out of our mindstream, like guilt and self-loathing and shame. And if we behave ethically, it seems like it's just easier to do that. So there's a benefit.
Yeah, if you, to put it into more conventional Buddhist terms, behaving ethically purifies negative karma that we've created in the past. This is something that comes up a lot in discussions. If we've had all those previous lifetimes and the implication that we've created all this negative karma, how do we get rid of that? And the Buddha said that behaving ethically in this lifetime purifies negative karma from the past. Okay, so we do purification practices here, which are formal meditation practices, for that purpose, but just behaving ethically in and of itself, without coming to Kadampa Center, without saying a lot of prayers, without setting up an altar, purifies past negative karma. Okay, is that kind of what you're saying? And those imprints that are on our mind stream, okay? If we want to remove those negative imprints, the anger, the jealousy, the selfishness, they can be removed. The Buddha said those are not an intrinsic part of our mind. We do that by purification. And ethical behavior is a purification practice. Okay, a very powerful one. So that's another reason we want to behave ethically. What are other reasons that we want to behave ethically? Over here.
I think the reason that we want to live ethically is because then we can live peacefully with other human beings.
Yeah, okay.
Then we don't want to start to fight. We don't want to start the war. Then we just live peacefully for our own sake and others.
Okay.
That's the best reason, I guess.
Okay. Good. Let's see in the back.
I've heard it called like the five precepts and ethical discipline according to Buddhism, as the major preventative measure stopping the habitual accumulation of negative karma, which not only affects yourself, but worse, can negatively affect others.
Yeah. This is getting back to, we've got all this negative karma. We're aware of that. Not only do we want to purify what's there, but we want to stop adding to the accumulation. Okay, so behaving ethically prevents us from accumulating more negative karma, and it also creates positive karma. Okay, karma that will ripen in the future. Everything that we're experiencing in this life that we don't like, that's a problem, that, as Geshe Gelug refers to it, as a complication, is a result of behaving unethically at some point in the past. All of it. It's not random. It didn't just happen. It's the result of our past behavior. So if we want to avoid those problems in the future, we need to behave ethically now. Our behavior now creates our experience in the future. None of it is random. It's all the result of our actions of body, speech, and mind. Yeah, good. Good point there. Good point there. One more here.
Basically, I think that being ethical, behaving ethically, is just pure survival. Mm-hmm. If I'm ethical towards everyone else, and I do the right thing, so to speak, then, and everybody else does the same thing, not only do we have, so we can survive better. Mm-hmm. We're not killing each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And second, it just creates happiness.
Bingo. That's the, yes. So, it makes us happy.
If you are, when you're conscious, the lady said, creates peace.
Yeah, this is, yeah.
And so when you are at peace, you're happy.
Yeah.
And you don't have to have this, oh, I did this, my goodness, this was not good. And then those negative feelings about what you did. So it creates happiness, and happiness makes us survive as a species in a much better and spiritual manner. That's what I think.
Yeah. But that's the the most immediate one. I think behaving ethically makes us happy. It creates the causes for happiness. And as His Holiness the Dalai Lama says at the beginning of almost every teaching session, we all want to be happy. That's a completely valid aspiration. It's not selfish. We're not wanting to be happy at the expense of others, but we want to be happy. And the way to do that, the way to achieve that, maybe not today or tomorrow, but in the future, is to behave ethically now. It's what His Holiness refers to as enlightened self-interest. If we behave ethically, if we don't harm others, we are creating the causes for our own happiness. Okay? Yeah, I mentioned this in a class, the TV show The Good Place. Anybody watch that? It's a very interesting show. It's about, I don't recommend TV shows a lot, but it really addresses the question of what it means to be a good person. Yeah. So if you watch it with the right intention, I think that would be ethical behavior. Yeah. Sandy.
I just wanted to add one thought. As one of the things I learned many years ago that has been very helpful for me in this is the how you look at vows.
Mm-hmm.
And vows are not like a you can't do this type of promise to yourself. They're more like safeguards for me. They're more positive mm-hmm. that these are guidelines that help me. They're not things I can't do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a different
mm-hmm.
way that helps me with the ethics and the...
Yeah, okay. But ethical behavior is the key to our own happiness. Okay. Now, if we behave it, we don't know if we're going to make other people happy, okay, by behaving ethically. That's something, we can hope for and we can aspire to, but we know behaving ethically definitely will make us happy. Okay. Behaving in an ethical manner creates the cause for our own happiness, for ourselves not to suffer and to be happy. So that is a completely valid, non-selfish reason to behave ethically. wanting to be happy is not selfish, because the only path, according to the Buddha, is through treating others as you would wish to be treated yourself. Enlightened self-interest. Any other comments? Okay. So, how do we do it? How do we behave ethically? How do we stop? How do we refrain from destructive behavior? How do we even know what is destructive behavior? I mean, that's a big issue. You know, lots of times we think we're doing things for the best, but they don't necessarily have positive results. When we're in the moment, do we necessarily have the wisdom to determine if we're behaving ethically or not? Venerable George Dreyfus, who was one of the first Westerners, to get the Geshe degree, said that human beings have an infinite capacity for deluding themselves about what their motivation is. I mean, we can just, do something for the worst possible motivation, but think we're doing it, convince ourselves we're doing it for the benefit of others. This is going to hurt me more than it hurts you. Probably go, not a good motivation necessarily. So how do we avoid destructive behavior? How did the Buddha help us out there? He had his teachers. And he gave us a list, as always. He gave us a list of what's referred to as the 10 non-virtuous actions. People familiar with that? Okay. Can anybody recite them? Body, speech, and mind. There's three of body. Okay. No killing. Don't kill. Don't commit sexual misconduct. Yeah, don't steal. Yeah. No, killing, stealing, or basically having sex with other people's partners is a simple way of putting sexual misconduct. Okay. Yeah. Next we have the four of speech, which are don't lie, don't gossip, don't use harsh speech, don't use divisive speech, speech that splits people apart. Okay. Don't lie, don't gossip, don't speak out of anger, use harsh speech, and don't use divisive speech. And then there are three negative actions of mind, which are covetousness, wrong view, ill will, yeah. Covetousness, ill will, wrong view, okay? Covetous means craving things, ill will means anger. Wrong view means, basically means not seeing reality as it is, okay? So these are 10 non-virtues. The Buddha was not a god. He was not an all-powerful being. He's not saying, don't do these because I told you not to do them. He's saying, I would recommend, based on my experience, I would recommend not doing these because 99 out of 100 times they're going to make you unhappy. Okay? If you want to be happy and you don't have the wisdom to really act in the best possible way, at least you can start by avoiding these things as much as possible. They agitate your mind. They make you upset. They make you unhappy. Okay, now we always hear stories about an enlightened being out of complete compassion may have stolen something or may have said something that had the appearance of anger. But the Buddha is saying for most of us in our present state of confusion, of not seeing things the way they are, in general, avoid these actions. Okay, that's a more elaborate version of Venerable Rabina's zip your lip and keep your hands to yourself. Okay, don't do these things. Don't say these things. Don't think these things. Okay? That in and of itself is a tremendous accomplishment. But if you find that your mind is not obsessed with those thoughts, then there's room to actually develop the positive qualities, the generosity, the patience, the compassion, the love, that are essential qualities of enlightenment. Okay? So the Buddha said, if you want to behave ethically because you want to be happy, I would suggest that you start by avoiding these actions as much as possible. Okay? The ones of body, as we say, are comparatively easy to avoid. The ones of speech are much more difficult to avoid, but possible. The ones of mind are incredibly difficult and really take a lot of work. But they're possible for all of us in our current state, whether we're, however far we are along our path. Okay? So the 10 non-virtues, that's a way to help us behave ethically, kind of like training wheels on our bicycle. Any comments? Yeah, well, the people hear them and they think they're 10 commandments, and they're really not. They're just suggestions. Buddha's just saying, if you do these, more than likely it's going to make you unhappy. Now, that's your choice, whether you want to or not. Yeah, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just saying avoid these if you want to be happy based on my experience. Okay. Yeah, comment?
Hi, this is reminding me of something that I heard Venerable Amy Miller say. Mm-hmm. When you were saying these things agitate your mind, make you upset, and I can't remember the last thing you said. It left my brain before I
can't
write
either,
it down.
Yeah.
But she was talking about, like, I have a friend who recently said something about, I feel like I have a right to be upset about this. And she was talking about something that happened with her stepson or her husband or something. And I used to feel that way, too, and let myself get upset. But something that Amy Miller said was, think about how that makes you feel. If someone has upset you and then you react and you, like, yell back at them or cuss them or make a rude gesture or something, throw something at them like my mother does to my dad. I'm serious. You know, how does that really make you feel? Does that make you feel better? Really? You know, so that's really helped me thinking about that. You know, it makes me more agitated, actually.
Yeah.
You know, you think I had been thinking on wrongly before that. Letting it out actually made me feel better, but it really doesn't. And that's something that has actually helped me with, you know, anger issues and things like that, especially road rage.
Yeah. I mean, there may be a little bit of rush that feels good. We kind of like that, but I think the aftermath of it is an agitated mind that regrets.
Right, because you've been unkind to someone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, good point. Anyone else? Okay. That's all the material I had this morning. I think so. Yeah. So let's do our dedications. Okay. We'll finish a little bit early. Let's see. What page are the the Shantideva is on? When you sit here every week and go through this stuff, but then when you're up here in front of people, you can't remember anything. Okay. Shanti Deva's dedication is on 246. We'll read that. Okay. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain a notion of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, to dispel the miseries of the world. And I will do seven Tara mantras for the long,
and happy life of our teachers Geshe Gelug and Geshe Sampo. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Okay, thank you, everyone. Let's see, Geshe Gelug will be back next Sunday. Do you know exactly what's planned? Do you have any idea? I know it's going to be quite festive, and we'll present katas. Jill is off her deathbed. She was sick this week. We can rejoice.
Because I created negative karma.
Yeah.
I wasn't ethical somewhere. Yeah, I'm purifying it right now, so we're good for the next. I'm setting it up for the future. So let's see. I'm going to go through everything I can think of with all the announcements for everybody who's not here. So next Sunday, I kind of briefly what I know, we'll do the typical thing where normally we try to get you guys in here. And I do, while I've got the stage, we have time. The reason we do try to scoot you in here is because it's actually a kindness to our teacher. It's a practice to be not only just seated, but settled in our minds when the teacher arrives. So if you see Don and I flicking lights and ringing gongs and all that, it's because it's for your benefit. We want you to be able to be comfortable and peaceful, and it shows respect to Geshe-la. So that's why we do that. So this time, we will not ask you to come in here. I'm saying it's because it'll be funny. So we'll ask you to stay out there, and if you don't have your own kata, a kata is actually an offering to the teacher. You can buy one in the bookstore, but we do always have loaners. So we'll create kind of a conga line, we call it. Sometimes we go out the door if we need to, but we want to sort of lead them into here with our katas, and that's a sign of respect, too, when the teacher comes back. So we're asking him, welcoming home, asking him to, again, continue to teach us Tibetan tradition. And then I don't really know what else is planned that day if there's...
There's going to be a special flower offering.
Oh, okay.
That will include everybody in.
So we've done that before where it's really beautiful. There's flowers that it will be obvious how to do this.
Julie's wedding.
Yeah, from someone's wedding that is a member here. So you will, and if you're streaming, hello, Julie. It will be obvious how to do it. There'll be flowers given to you, and then I think we will make a procession to offer them to Geshe-la. So that's a beautiful sign of welcoming home, too. And then anything else, it'll be Donna will lead us into whatever we need to know. Elise, her announcement would be that we're still collecting eyeglasses. So you see that bag in the lobby. That's through the end of this June. No. I've missed from traveling. So, end of July.
Well, you don't know you were in a coma for 3 weeks?
Yeah, where have I been? So that leads me to where have I been. One was a funeral, but the last one was an FPMT meeting in Brooklyn, so that's one reason why I was gone. And so, did anybody see the side note in this week? Yeah. See, I caught everybody. So I mentioned that when I'm away and I see other centers from around the world, or mainly around, it's North America, so it's kind of that region of the world. How many people, like Shanti Deva Center in Brooklyn, and it was really cool. But imagine what that could be like there, and we're in North Carolina. You might have a sense of what you think goes on. How many people do you think show up on Sunday morning there? Just make a guess. 140, I have. Zero. And I'm not blasting anybody from Shanti Deva Center. All I want to let you know is that the culture is completely different, so nobody shows up there on Sunday morning. And they don't have a resident teacher, but they have a lot of visiting teachers and an amazing program and really strong director, SBCs. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. But they are having a very difficult time to get people to show up. And look at, this is slim pickings for us, right? So it's just interesting how that works. For DB, they have all the classes. They all have the same offerings. In January, it's a little different in July, I know. But in January, there were 80 people that showed up. And when I said that, the room just went, ah! You know, so that's kind of shocking how I'm saying this, because I just want to let you guys know that this is such an amazing center. So when I go away and travel, everybody wants to know everything that we do. And I'm there trying to learn from everybody else. So it's just an interesting perspective, and I just want to offer that to you to just, again, take that moment to just rejoice. We hear it all the time, but just to be really happy about what we have here and what is available to you. It's so easy to just sleep in and stuff, but this is all available to you every Sunday. Almost every night of the week, there's something going on. So yesterday we had a blood drive. Who here gave? Thank you. Thank you. Awesome. So I couldn't come just because, but I heard, and I don't know how it relates to the years before. This is our third annual. We had 27 people come and 22 units given. So round of applause for that. That was amazing. I think that's, there's all the pilgrims couldn't give because they traveled out of the country. So there's a lot of high restrictions for giving. Sunday, we got Geshe-la, so we will need the water bowls taken down. We always ask for that each time. Mm-hmm. And if you do want to go around the room and anybody wants to clean up, that's good. So the last thing is the Did You Know announcement, and I'll just do it this time. I hear sometimes during the annual appeal that people say, I didn't know. Someone actually said it out loud. I never knew that we could give monthly. When it's not the annual appeal, they never hear about it. And so I was like, oh, my God, I never thought to tell people that they can give monthly. I mean, everybody hears all the ways that you can give, and there are many ways you can give. But to become a monthly sustainer, we don't really talk about it any other time of the year. So this is the announcement for this morning, is to say, if you don't know that you can give monthly to support our center for all the teachings and everything that we offer, you can just click on donate, and there's a whole new page now. The Did You Know campaign is up, and you can see all the different ways to give. Click on monthly sustainer, just read about it. And then it'll show you how to sign up if that's something that you'd like to do. So there's ways to give to visiting teachers and pujas, in-kind donations, and all kinds of things. But the monthly sustainer is one that really does support us consistently so that we know, the people who work in finance and giving, that we know what's coming in. It helps us rely on that. So thank you for that, and I think that's everything.
I just want to say, if people could keep Susan McClure in their prayers over next month. She died this past week, and she was a smiling presence here at the center. And
there's a picture of her out there if you want to remember. Mm-hmm. She usually sat about here. She sometimes had some oxygen with her. And she was – some of us went to lunch with her. Julie and I, sometimes we go to lunch. She was delightful. She was very intelligent when you really got to talk to her. Art history buff who knew. And so she did pass away. And so we want to keep her in our thoughts and prayers.
Yeah.
Thank you, Robin.
Okay.